that PowerPoint up, that'd be ace. So what I want to do now is I'm just going to give you a really quick outline of the structure, in case you missed it, there it was before. I'm going to give you a really quick outline of the structure of Daniel. And it's going to be a really, really brief outline, and obviously we're going to look at it in more depth as we go through week by week. This is the moment of your failure, Annalie. There we go. Right, so the structure of Daniel. And I could never, in a short time, give you a real understanding and a real appreciation for the structure of Daniel. It's such an intricate and well put together book that no mortal hand on its own could ever put something so intricate, so precise together. So Daniel is 12 chapters. I split it like this because the first chapter is in Hebrew. The chapter 2 through to 7 are in Aramaic, which is an ancient language, and then 8 to 12 goes back into Hebrew again. I was hoping they're going to be in little rings, but they don't appear to be, so that's fine. So what I'm going to do is, so one's in Hebrew, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are in Hebrew, and 2 through to 7 are in Aramaic. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take number 1, we're going to move it over there, we're going to put 2 and 7 together in a clump, and then have 8, 9, 10 in a random order down the side, like that, and all shall become clear in a second. So, this is briefly what they're talking about in the chapters. So you've got one's the intro, you've got things you might have heard of in the past, like the fiery furnace, the lion's den, and all of these are joined together. So we've got 2 and 7 are joined together. It's a king's dream, it's Daniel's dream. 3 and 6 are joined together, the fiery furnace, the lion's den. You can see the similarity there. And 4 and 5 is, 4 is the king Nebuchadnezzar and his approach when God speaks to him. And 5 is Belshazzar and his king and his approach when God speaks to him. And then Daniel's dream leads into Daniel's vision, Daniel's prayer, and then Daniel's third vision, which is 10, 11 and 12. Bear in mind that the original scriptures wouldn't have been split up into chapters. This has just been the normal flow of one big massive scroll, and we split it up for ease. So 10, 11, 12 would have definitely been one section lumped in together. So not only are they connected like that, but they're also connected across like this. So you've got the top bits, and into Daniel's vision, you talk about patience. You've got the intro, the fiery furnace, the lies, then Daniel's prayer, talking about faithfulness in service. And then you've got suffering, which is the chapter about Nebuchadnezzar, the chapter about Belshazzar, and then also 10, 11, and 12 being an accumulation of all of these topics together and finishing off the book. Not only that, but they're also connected downwards like this. So as well as those topics being explored, we'll see that 2, 3, and 4 are these topics explored when somebody is humbled before God. And we'll see 5, 6, and 7 are these themes and topics explored when somebody is not humble before God as well. And that's just a really quick overview, but hopefully you'll start to see that structure as we work through the book of Daniel. And that will give you a little bit of an insight into how the book of Daniel is constructed and how the author, breathed in by the Holy Spirit, has put that book together. But what I want to give you today are some tips for when we look at Daniel. These are tips which you can start to apply to the whole of our Old Testament reading, but particularly when we're looking at the book of Daniel. So the first thing I want you to bear in mind is we're not Daniel. We are not Daniel. We are not the people that Daniel was. We are not forced to eat certain types of food every day. We have not been transported away from our home. We have not seen our friends slaughtered and killed. We are not having to live in such a society so separate like Daniel was. We're not facing the constant threat of death every day. Even though we're not Daniel, we can still hear messages of hope and direction. The same God that spoke to Daniel about messages of hope, the same God that spoke to Daniel about direction and how he should live, is the same God that speaks to us now. We just have to be careful that when we're reading Daniel, and when we're looking for a message that God's speaking in Daniel, just be aware in the back of your mind that we're reading Daniel from a position of great influence and great prosperity, where Daniel and the people he was writing to and about, of course, was not. The second tip that I want us to take on board is the value of Daniel. So in Daniel, we'll hear about how Daniel prays in a window facing towards Jerusalem. We'll hear about how Daniel sticks to some really strict food laws. The value of Daniel is not in pointing out how to live. It's not saying that what Daniel does is exactly what we should be doing. You should be a Daniel in every single way.
That's not the point of it. It's not the value of Daniel. The value of Daniel is showing God's redemptive plan. And we'll start to build up this picture of this God who, despite everything, is still in control. And that's the value of Daniel. The third tip I want you to bear in mind is the Old Testament is not a book of heroes and villains. No matter how much we might see Sunday school stuff quite often, or quick Bible passages, if you have those like 365 Bible verses for the year sort of devotionals, saying, hey, be a Samson, or hey, don't be a Belshazzar. Samson was a murderer, fair enough. The value of the Old Testament is not in saying these are heroes, these are villains. It's not a book of people we can look to and say, be like this person, not like that person. Every single person in the Bible is complex. Their relationship with God and how God speaks to them and reveals himself through them is complex. And when we start to reduce the Old Testament into a book of heroes and villains, we're really not allowing God the space to speak that he wants to. Because God is always revealed through relationship. And that brings on to our fourth point. God reveals himself through relationship. In Daniel, we'll constantly see, in relationship, the sovereignty of God. We'll constantly see, in relationship, how God is always in charge. Even in the first chapter there, when we read about Daniel and his friends being taken away, it says because God gave Jehoiakim into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. God is always constantly in control. It's not Daniel who interprets dreams. It's God who gives Daniel the interpretation of the dreams. It's not God who saves Daniel and his friends. It's not Daniel who saves his friends. It's God who saves Daniel and his friends. It's God who gives the gifts to Daniel and his friends. God's relationship with Daniel, God's relationship with Nebuchadnezzar, God's relationship with Belshazzar, they'll start to build this picture of how God is in control, and God's control of the situation is revealed in relationships. And when we think about a God who reveals himself in relationships, we can look to the life of Jesus. God wanted to reveal himself to us. The way that he has always done that is in relationship with people. And that's why God decided from the beginning of time, before anything was created, God is human. So he can come, be with us through the person of Jesus and have a relationship with us. And it's in the relationship that we know God through the person of Jesus, revealed through the Holy Scriptures and how Jesus interacted with people and his relationships with people. That's how we can know God. And then it's with these Jesus spectacles, if you will. It's with these Jesus glasses, knowing more about God than Daniel and those around him did, because we know God walking around and being with people. It's through these Jesus glasses that we can then look back onto the Old Testament and see the wealth of God and how he interacts with people revealed to us. So I just want you to bear that in mind. When we look back into the Old Testament, particularly when we look back into Daniel, do it through Jesus' glasses. God revealed in relationship to us. It's dangerous sometimes to interpret the Old Testament with just solely for Christ and bring Christ into the Old Testament. So if you open up the book of the Old Testament, particularly Daniel, and you're saying, right, where's Jesus here? Then that's really dangerous. You're not going to understand what God's trying to say. So read from the original point of view, bearing in mind the things we've looked at today when we've explored Daniel, the historical setting, the people, the situation that Daniel found himself in. Read like you're reading it from that point of view, but let the relationship you've got with Jesus through the power of the Holy Spirit reveal in you more and more the relationship that God is building with people in the book of Daniel. In the third year of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. I want you to think now about that relationship that God's building with people, as we know, through Jesus. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylon and put in the treasure house of his God. Here it looks to us, on a cursory reading, that God has lost control. It'd be easy to read this and say, "Phew, God's lost control." But God was in control. We read here that he was God who gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hands. And then we look without Jesus' glasses on at this, And we can start to think in the life of Jesus when it looked like Jesus, God in relationship with us. When did Jesus look like he'd lost control? When was God not in control? And I think at the moment in the lead up to Calvary, that God himself would die surely shows that God's lost. That Jesus was being crucified, persecuted, arrested, tried, and then executed. Surely that shows that God's no longer in control and God has lost. But of course we know from our relationship with Jesus that that's not true. That was always God's plan, because God was always in control. That's always been part of his redemptive plan from the moment he created us to the moment where Jesus comes again. Through everything, even when it appears like God is not in control, he has got this. In our lives, now. When we think that things are on top of us, they're overwhelming us, we look at the world, we look at the state of the world, and we think, Lord, where are you in this? Surely God has lost control. Never has he. He hasn't now, and never will he. God is always in control. And let that be the main theme that resonates with you in the back of your mind when we go through Daniel. God has got this. So we're going to finish our time together this morning by